Egg will see exactly what this means. I mustn't let them clash over this Operation Bootstrap. I've got to get them to work together, not against one another. Wilhelm Zimmermann almost toppled off his bar stool as he flinched away from his friend's blazing anger. His huge bulk teetered on the swiveling stool. He had to grab the edge of the bar with both hands to steady himself. Verban took no notice of his obese friend's struggle to stay on the stool.
"Are you mad?"
Verban hissed, his teeth showing.
"Do you want to ruin us all?"
The bar was of the American type, in the old Osborne Hotel where the tourists stayed. Verban had insisted on their meeting there, rather than the Ratskeller next to the campus where they usually had their sidles of beer. It was late in the afternoon, yet the place was almost empty. Muted, bland music issued thinly from the speakers in the ceiling. A few elderly couples, obviously tourists from Japan or one of the Asian Rim Tigers, sat together at one circular table, their heads together over a vidcam as they viewed their day's video discs. Verban had suggested this hotel bar as a place where they would not be seen. Zimmermann thought they looked as obvious as a syphilitic canker on a nun's face. How much better he would have felt in the noisy fellowship of the beer hall. Zimmermann steadied himself, then said,
"No one is going to be ruined just because I occasionally help a wealthy foreigner," he whispered in the quiet, almost deserted bar.
"Madness,"
Verban repeated,
"sheer madness."
Zimmermann had known the man for nearly 30 years. Verban had always been the jittery type, scarecrow thin, nervous, given to smoking illicit cigarettes when he thought no one was watching. He was a professor in the university's law school, on the verge of graduating into the bliss of a professor emeritus's well-earned retirement.
"I've been doing it for so many years," Zimmermann said. "Why does it upset you now?"
"Because the pressures are stronger now than ever. Don't you watch the news? Don't you see what's going on around you, all over the world?"
"You mean that assassination in New York?"
"That's only part of it."
"And the treaty that the United Nations is sponsoring," Zimmermann smiled at his old friend. "You see, I do keep an eye on events outside my laboratory."
"Switzerland will sign the treaty."
Zimmermann shrugged and reached for his glass of beer, a delicate thing that held only a fraction of a seidel's worth. It was almost empty. At their favorite haunt, the barmaids always made certain that the mugs were topped off regularly.
"So Switzerland will sign the stupid treaty. So what? The authorities have never bothered me."
"They will now," Verban whispered harshly. "They will close your laboratory entirely."
"No, they won't stop research."
"Yes, they will. And they'll come looking for you first of all. You with your proud announcement that you saved that boy's life on the moon with nanotherapy."
"But it's true," Zimmermann insisted. "I did."
"And you had to tell the world about it?"
"I had to tell the world that nanotherapy is useful, therapeutic, and, used properly, it isn't harmful."
"So now you are a marked man. They will close your laboratory."
Feeling sudden panic, Zimmermann blurted,
"But what am I to do?"
"Retire as gracefully as you can. You certainly have enough money to live well."
He shook his fleshy head.
"Not really. Most of my income I spent on new research, once the university stopped funding nanotechnology work."
"It's over, Willy,"
Verban said, half annoyed, half sorrowful.
"You mustn't fight against them. Just take this peacefully and go off into retirement."
"Never."
"You'll get the entire university shut down, you fool. Don't you understand what kind of power they have?"
Zimmermann wanted to laugh.
"They can't shut down the entire university."
"They can and they will, if you try to struggle against them."
"But..."
Zimmermann's words died in his throat. He stared at his old friend. Verban was terrified. If the university was shut down, who would pay out his pension? His voice suddenly heavy, Zimmermann said,
"What they are doing is terribly, terribly wrong."
"Yes, I know it," said Verban. "But they have the power, and they will use it mercilessly."
"I can't stop my life's work. I won't. There must be some university somewhere, perhaps in America."
"Ha!"
"Or Canada?"
Zimmermann asked hopefully.
Verban shook his head. Zimmerman realized he was perspiring. A fear reflex, he knew. They're making me afraid. He felt a sudden surge of hatred for the faceless people who ladled out fear as part of their power. Verban said,
It's all finished, Willy. Nanotechnology, even theoretical research on the subject, will be outlawed once the treaty goes into effect.
There must be some place, Zimmerman muttered.
Nowhere on Earth, said Verban sadly.
Zimmerman heaved an enormous sigh. But then he remembered that his protege, Chris Cardenas, was now living in Canada. Vancouver, he recalled. Perhaps she can help. After all, she won the Nobel Prize. She must have some influence.
Chelsea, Massachusetts. She was good-looking. Older than Killifer would have liked, but a real stunner despite her age. Skinny, though. Her arms were rail thin, and he guessed her legs were, too, beneath the tight ankle-length skirt she wore. No way of telling how much of a figure she had under that severe outfit. It was plain, dull gray from the choker collar down to her plain, dull gray shoes. Killifer almost wondered why she didn't wear gloves. Every other part of her body was covered. No jewelry at all. But her face was enough to kill for. A sculptor's dream. The kind of face video stars wished they had. A black Venus. A chocolate, cream-colored goddess of beauty. As she walked up to Killifer, he was totally unable to stop himself from staring at her. Automatically, he got up from the bench where he had been waiting. But then he saw something in her eyes that almost frightened him. Her eyes were pained, haunted, rimmed with red like the fires of hell.
"Jonathan Killifer," she said needlessly. Her voice was smoky, low, inviting.
"Jack," he managed to choke out.
"I'm Melissa Hart. Pleased to meet you, Jack."
Without a smile, without any change in those burning eyes.
"Would you follow me, please?"
Killifer wanted to tell her he would follow her off the edge of a cliff, but her eyes stopped him. In silence, he walked beside her down the busy corridor. He noticed that all the people here dressed in gray, men and women alike. The only difference was that the men wore trousers while all the women wore tight ankle-length skirts. Well, Killifer thought, they sure can't run away from you in those hobbles. He expected her to lead him into her office, or maybe a conference room. Instead, he followed her to the end of the hallway, up a narrow flight of stairs, and then through a metal door out onto the building's roof. The open sunlight made Killifer's eyes water.
"We can speak freely here, Jack," she said.
That worried him. Wiping at his eyes, he asked, "What do you mean? Is your office bugged?" Melissa gave him a cool smile.
"Jack, the Urban Corps doesn't believe in private offices, not even for General O'Connor. I thought that we could have our first chat here without anyone else to bother us."
"How'd you find me?" Killifer asked.
"We have sources of information."
She walked slowly toward the brick parapet along the roof's edge.
"Isn't it a beautiful day?"
Following her, Killifer could see that the building was on a hill, and the whole city of Boston was laid out before them beneath the bright, cloudless sky. After so many years at Moonbase, the deep, clear blue almost hurt. Everything so dazzling. The green of the trees, the red brick buildings, the glittering glass facades of the soaring downtown high-rises. Killifer took in a deep breath of real air. It smelled great, with the salt tang coming in off the harbor. He could almost taste it.
"You were born in Boston, weren't you?" Melissa asked him.
He nodded and pointed. "Winthrop. Out there by the old airport." A clipper ship took off from the airport like a toy at this distance, the thunder of its rocket engines nothing more than a muted rumble.
"Do you remember what Chelsea used to be when you were growing up in Winthrop, Jack?"
Killifer grinned sourly. "A dump. We used to make jokes about Chelsea. It was the bottom of the barrel."
"That's right," said Melissa Hart, like a schoolteacher pleased with her student's answer. "For generations, Chelsea was the bottom of the barrel."
"And now?"
"Now it's a model community. The Urban Corps has transformed Chelsea. We brought new industry into the community, new businesses. People have jobs now. They have hope. Crime is down.
The schools are turning out model citizens.